This is an interview with Marie Hansen on Religion in Moorhead. It's held April 15, 1985 at Moorhead State University, the Audiovisual Center. The interviewer is Margaret Nordley. Marie Hansen came to Moorhead in 1951 with her husband, Reverend Arthur E. Hansen, who had been elected president of the Northern Minnesota District of the Evangelical Lutheran Church, and they joined Trinity Lutheran Church in Moorhead. In addition to observations on Moorhead, Marie will tell about trends in other Lutheran congregations to which she has belonged, which are similar to the trends found in the Moorhead area churches of the Norwegian Lutheran Church background. First, I'll ask Marie to tell something about her early years, where you were born and where you grew up.
I was born in Winnebago County, north central Iowa, my parents lived on a farm. I was the youngest of seven children. And I was baptized February 14th, 1897. And we belonged at that time to a small country church just about 2 miles from our home. I attended country school until I was in the second grade. And my father used to take us to school on stormy days. Otherwise, we walked to school, all of us that were of grade school age. My two older sisters were teachers, and they taught not far away in other rural schools. Then when I was finished second grade, we moved to Forest City, Iowa. And there we lived for a number of years, lived until 1910. In 1910, we moved to Fergus Falls, Minnesota, and lived there until I was married. That was in 1921.
And you went to school, your college work?
I started, I went to high school in Fergus Falls, and we had a college there by the name of Park Region College, and I attended there for 3 years. Then the school was closed and joined in with Concordia College. I didn't come to Concordia because Concordia was a smaller school at that time than Park Region, and I was afraid it would close. So I transferred to St. Olaf College and graduated from there in 1918. Then I went on to teach school. I taught in Laramie, North Dakota in the high school for 3 years, and then I was married.
Yes, and you married a husband. Your husband was a pastor, and it was then the Norwegian Lutheran Church, wasn't it?
That's right. He wasn't a pastor at the time I married him, but he was ordained about a month afterwards. And, of course, I attended his ordination. He was ordained in Wisconsin.
And then where were some of the parishes that you served in?
The first parish we served was, we lived in Middle River, a small town north of Thief River Falls in Minnesota. And we had four churches and three preaching places. So our parish consisted of seven congregations, three services one Sunday and four services the next.
Then where did you go?
We were in Middle River for only about 3 years. The driving was very heavy there, very hard, should I say. We had to use a team about 5-6 months of the year, and a buggy, and then a sleigh. And then about 6 months of the year, we were able to go by Ford. And then we moved to Stephen, Minnesota, where we stayed for about 4 years. And there we had a three-point parish. Argyle was a small town south of Stephen, and then we had one country parish. That was a very interesting place, and we enjoyed our work there very much. But then the call came to Bemidji, Minnesota, and we were there for 7 years. We'd had a very interesting life there as far as the church was concerned. The Lutheran Church had a very difficult time. The pastor had mostly Norwegian services, and the people there really weren't ready for that. They had it years before, but they were wanted it in English now, and so my husband insisted on English services, and the Norwegian service was in the afternoon, And of course, the Norwegians didn't like that, but that was to our advantage because they came to the English services and soon it was all English. And there we had just the one parish for a long time. And while we were there, we started to build a church, and that church they've been able to have just one pastor, so that the work has been very satisfactory there. And they did a good deal of the young people, worked a great deal with the young people at the college, Bemidji Teachers College, worked with us in the church. We had what we call Lutheran students work, and that helped a great deal both for the church and the students.
And then you moved to St. Paul?
Then we moved to St. Paul, and by that time we had four children, and we served a church right near the state capitol, Christ Lutheran Church. In fact, at that time, it was just across from the state house on University and Park. And there we had rather hard going. It was during the Depression years, so we had beggars at our door regularly. And it was very difficult to turn them down, and yet you really didn't dare let them in. If you gave them money, they would use it for the wrong things. And so what we tried to do was to feed them.
And then you went to Brookings, South Dakota.
Then we went to, and while we were in St. Paul, our oldest boy graduated from Central High, and he had about a three-mile trek. And so he insisted on going to that school, which was a very fine school. And so he used a bicycle, and we paid $5 for the bicycle, secondhand bicycle. Mm-hmm. Well, then we moved to Brookings, South Dakota, and we were there 7 years. That was a very interesting place, and we were also advisors. My husband and I were advisors for the Lutheran students on the campus of South Dakota State University. And many of the students that came there to school came from little towns in South Dakota. Well, we had a choir in our church, and we had services every Sunday morning, and many of the students came to our church. And then when we had the Lutheran students met every other Sunday night in our church, they prepared their own meals, and one of the grocers there in town gave them day-old bread so they could make cinnamon toast, and he gave them other foods, supplies, and then some of the people in the congregation furnished food so that they could prepare their evening meal, because they didn't serve meals on the college campus. These students paid 25 cents for that, and that covered any expense we had.
And where did you move next?
Well, from Bemidji, we moved to Duluth, and there were two congregations that had been trying to unite for some time. But there was they were very close together, but for some reason or other, the people couldn't agree which church to give up. And so we came when things were rather uneasy, and it went together pretty well. And with the two congregations, there wasn't room for all of them in one of those small churches, so we met in one of the high schools, and met there for a year, and then began building a church that is now called First Lutheran Church in Duluth.
Now, you were saying that Trinity copied this plan later on?
Yes. While we were there, Trinity in Moorhead sent a delegation up there, Erling Jacobson and his wife, and I don't know the names of the other people that came up. They took a look at the church that we had built, or had been built while we were there, and they liked it very much. They thought it was very practical. It was not one of those churches with a tall spire like we'd been used to before, but it was a little more modern type, and it was very usable. And they thought they would like that type of a church here in Moorhead, and eventually they built one very similar.
Yes, so now we come to Moorhead. You moved here in January 1951, and at that time, Trinity Church had recently had burned down the previous April. Do you remember any impressions about Trinity when you first came?
Well, we worshipped in a junior high school, And the services there, of course, when you don't meet in a regular church, it's a little not quite as formal. But we liked the people, and it was not far from where we were to live. And so that's the church we joined.
Yes. And perhaps we can hear a little bit about the various aspects of the work in Trinity. For example, the Sunday school.
Yes, I know they had Sunday school, a very fine Sunday school even at that time. I know they had release time school because I taught classes there for a while. And they had a choir. I think we had three pastors.
It was Reverend Jacobson, Reverend Evenson, was it?
Yes.
I don't remember, excuse me, who else was serving it. Then something about the service. As we mentioned earlier, the church body was called the Norwegian Lutheran Church, and it's changed to the Evangelical Lutheran Church, and then in 1960 to the American Lutheran Church. And you remember something about the changing the hymn book? When we got the new red hymn book, which was for the new church, what were some of the problems and connected?
Well, I think some of the hymns that we were used to in the other hymn book was omitted, and it caused a little difficulty. The liturgy was somewhat changed also, and many of the older people didn't like it very well, but we got used to it and learned to like it very much.
Yes, I remember that at Trinity, too. There were some people that were very much against it because they thought it was so different, and also some of the liturgy was different, but gradually it came to be used, and it was a great help. Then do you remember anything about when the green book came, and that was in the 70s sometime? That was another change of hymn book. Did that make a lot of difference?
Yes, I think that was harder to accept than the other because there were so many new hymns and so many that we were not acquainted with, and then I think quite a few of the old favorites were left out.
What do you remember about women's work in the Lutheran Church, especially in Moorhead?
Well, I know we had an active, what we called at that time, ladies' aid, and that was a very active group. I remember at the time we came, and we did have circles that met, but we had neighborhood circles mostly, and you joined with a group in your neighborhood. Well, that was fine, but of course you didn't get to meet people that lived probably a little farther away, didn't know them as well.
Mm-hmm. And weren't the original meetings in the afternoons?
Yes, I think almost all of them were in the afternoon.
And then later?
Now we have morning circles and afternoon and evening circles.
You mentioned also when we were talking about the how the mission emphasis has changed.
Yes, I think the foreign missions were stressed very, very much in the early days of the Lutheran Church. I think they are to some degree now quite well supported. I think we could do better. I think we have branched out a lot. We do a lot in instead of foreign missions, we probably do other things also, or I shouldn't say instead of, but also we do other work, like now, of course, world hunger and other charities that come in. But we probably haven't stressed foreign missions quite as much.
Coming back to women's place in the church, you say something, do you remember back when the early days, the women sat on one side of the church and the men on the other?
That's correct, and I remember those days very well, because my father was one of the first ones that didn't do that. We were a family of seven. We were two girls, four boys, and then I was the youngest, so we were seven of us. And he insisted on sitting with his family. So they kind of looked sideways at him, and some time later he became a trustee of the church, and he brought it up again, and they still insisted on it. That the men sit on one side and the ladies on the other. It was just an old habit. And when we moved to Forest City, Iowa, our pastor there was Reverend L.W. Bow, who later became president of St. Olaf College. And he was a on our side all the way. And he just said to the people, I think the men should sit with their families. And from then on, I wasn't used to that.
And you remember something about women's vote in the church?
The women were not permitted to vote, and they didn't even attend the annual meetings or the other meetings that were called, say nothing about voting. And it's after I came to Morehead, I believe, the first voting I remember, the women were permitted to vote.
I think Trinity was unusual in that they'd had women voting for a long time, but there perhaps you remember that they didn't elect women to any of the positions, deacons or boards or anything, until fairly recently, I think.
I remember very well, and I think Mrs. Ewald was the first president.
Yes.
And she made a very good president of the council.
Yes.
Her congregation.
We've had a couple of presidents of the council in the recent years, but I think all that developed after the women's movement came in,
that's right.
Taking part in the councils and so forth. What about the men's work?
Well, we had a men's brotherhood when we came here. We had one before we came here in the church we served in Duluth. And we had one here that was very, very active. And then I think there were so many meetings in a city of this size, Morehead. There was Rotary and Lions and Kiwanis clubs, and the men had so many meetings that they could hardly make all these meetings. And it seemed like they didn't do it. And so they started during Lent and Advent to have a Friday noon meeting for the men, which they called Soup and Talk. And that's been very, very successful. And that has sort of taken the place of the men's brotherhood.
And that still continues, doesn't
it? Very active.
What about the young people?
Well, we had a Luther League when we came here. We had one years before. Luther League has been a very active organization in our church proper for many, many years. And I remember when we had been married only a few years, we were having Luther League meetings, and Bible camp started at that time. And young people seemed to attend those meetings. There weren't as many activities in the high school, so it was easier to get them to come to their meetings.
And what about Bible camps?
Well, the Bible camps have been going for many years. And I remember my husband and three other men, pastors, young pastors, that were so interested in the Bible camp movement. And they went to Green Lake, Minnesota, which is down near Spicer. And they happened to find a spot there that was for sale. And then people in the neighborhood were so afraid a resort was coming in there, and that it would just ruin their home camp life. And so these four young pastors put down $5 a piece and paid the man that had it for sale, and he said he would hold it until they could bring it up to the district. And they bought the camp, and it has been very active camp ever since. Then, of course, we know that when Pastor Schutz was here, then Camp Emmaus was started. And that has been a very fine spot for the people. And Trinity owns it now. So our church, Trinity, has this very fine spot where they can go for retreats, and not only the young people, but the older people also.
Then what about release time?
Well, as far as I remember, we've had release time for quite a few years. We had it before we came to Morehead, and I had taught in release time both before I came here and here in Morehead for a while, but I haven't kept up with it lately. I know they still have it.
Well, we should explain it perhaps. Release time is when the schools allow the children to leave the school, or at least to have the time off to take religious instruction during the regular school days, I think it is.
That's correct.
Then also, we used to have a vacation school in the summer. It used to be Norwegian school in the early days.
And when I was a very young girl in Iowa, we had vacation school. It was more or less a Norwegian school. And they wanted us to keep up the Norwegian language. My father was opposed to that, too, because he said when we lived in America, we should certainly use our English language mostly. But and he thought it was very important that the children have that, because in those days, I didn't have Sunday school. And so that was really the only religious instruction we got, and it was always a month's duration. Then as we moved on from town, place to place where I have lived, we've always had a vacation school, or summer Bible school, it was sometimes called. Mm-hmm. And we have it here at Trinity for the very young children also.
And now it's about a week in length.
That's
but of
right.
Of course, we have Sunday school to take the place of that. We should think about some of the ecumenical relationships. What about relationships with non-Lutherans? And you had a tape you were telling me about that gave something of the background of the relations, ecumenical relations, the non-Lutherans or the large Lutheran groupings.
Yes, I had a tape a while ago by Dr. Al Ragnus, and I picked out a few things from there that I thought were interesting. He said that in 1910... in the World Missionary Conference, the churches worked together. Protestant churches yes. worked together. And then in 1960, in New Delhi, the World Council of Churches met. And there they were all preaching the simple gospel. I think in years past, the foreign missionaries have worked quite well together, several Protestant churches. And but we weren't used to it here in this country. And then there were some things in regard to that. Most churches would never permit a person of another faith to come into your church and take the Lord's Supper. Mm-hmm. And now that has certainly changed a great deal. You do not have to be a member, at least not here in Trinity, you do not have to be a member of the church in order to take the Lord's Supper. And the Lord's Supper has changed a great deal, too. When I was young, people, whoever wanted to take of the sacrament, had to go and see the pastor either on Saturday afternoon or Sunday morning before services. You had to go in and talk to the pastor, and if you had done something maybe that was wrong, you had to have confession beforehand. And I thought that was quite different. And it was celebrated only about 3 times a year. And it isn't that way now. It's much more often.
You mentioned something about the Faith and Life movement.
Yes, here in Moorhead especially, we can remember very well some years back, there was a Faith and Life week that we had where the Catholics and all of the churches combined would meet and had very excellent speakers from each of the denominations, some wonderful speaker from a great distance away maybe. And that, as I remember, was about 20 years ago, maybe a little more. It was before my husband died, and that was 18 years ago, but it was before that. And I remember that Bishop Dvorak, who was the bishop in Fargo, came and spoke in our church, and when my son spoke to him about coming over, he said, "Well, he couldn't speak upstairs, but he would talk to us in the fellowship hall," and he gave such an excellent talk. And I remember definitely one thing he said: "We can work together. We don't have to belong to the same church, but we have the same goal. We expect to go to the same heaven."
In more recent years, your son Paul was pastor here in Trinity for a while. And now, which years were those, do you recall?
Well, I should have looked that up. He was here from about 1950. He was here in the 1970s. He was here for 9 years. And during that time, I remember Pastor Tweet was assisting in our church. He was a very excellent theologian. And I remember he spoke in the Catholic Church and we had a priest speak in our church. And that was really something.
Yes, that certainly is a great step forward from the early days when we were had great antagonism between the churches.
And then I think nowadays the priests and the pastors of the, at least of our church, have had weddings together. And when my oldest grandson was ordained in Crookston last year, there was a priest and a good friend of our family from years back that had a part in that ordination. He read scripture and he had a part in the ordination. And then the an Episcopal priest that was a friend of the family wanted to know if he could have a part in the service. He really asked for it, and he did have a part in the service. It was really very different. A Lutheran pastor, an Episcopal priest, and a Catholic priest all had a part in a Lutheran ordination.
Yes, that is quite remarkable. That's an indication of the growing development of good relations, I think, between the churches. Well, to come back to some other topics we haven't mentioned before, how has the role of the pastor's wife changed in these over these years?
Well, I think some years ago they really expected the pastor's wife to have a little part in the work of the congregation. She would probably be an advisor to the women's group. Well, they are somewhat now. I don't know what's expected, but they always hope they will. Mm-hmm. And then I think it wasn't customary for them to take office of the ladies' aid, as we called it, or the missionary society, but she had an active part in it. And then I think many times she would probably, if she was a musician, she was expected to lead the choir, or at least hope that they would get a pastor whose wife could lead the choir, and then maybe one that could be an organist. Mm-hmm. Because many times these people were musicians, and they made use of them. We don't see that as much now. They kind of each go their own way. But we do appreciate it very much when we have someone, and we do have right now at Trinity. Mrs. Whitty has been a very helpful person in the music department.
Yes, there we might think, too, of the difference in the chanting that is done in the church. In the early days, I think all the pastors were required to learn to chant at seminary.
Now, it added a great deal to the service. And some pastors are doing it now. And I have asked our pastor, Woody, if he wouldn't, because I know he could do it. But they haven't done it as yet here. But it adds a great deal to the service. And I know our Savior's Church in Moorhead have it. Not the pastor, but they have one of their members that sings the liturgy. My son in St. Paul usually sings it at his service, and I like it.
Yes, that used to be a part of the old service, and I really appreciate very much, too, but there were quite a few years when it simply was not done.
Well, I think if it isn't done well, it's better it isn't done. I think that some of the pastors probably couldn't sing that well, but they did have a special class at the seminary at the time my sons were young, and at the time my husband was there. They had the same pastor, or same teacher for a long time, that was a very fine instructor, and he helped a great deal with that.
Now, your father was a farmer, and your husband's father was a farmer, was he not?
That's right.
But then your husband became a pastor, and then your four sons became pastors.
That's right.
And now some of their children.
That's correct.
And one son. Any others?
Well, there's one at the seminary now that's finishing his second year.
So that is quite a tradition to it.
And it's a funny thing. It's something we have not urged at all. It's just something that's come on them through the years. I think only one of my sons had decided when he was a youngster that he wanted to be a pastor. The others just stayed away from it. No way would they be a pastor. But, you know, they couldn't get away from it. And the two older boys that were in the World War II, one in the Navy and one in the Army, they said that it was tugging away at them while they were in service. They decided when they come back they had to go to the seminary. So it was a call from God and not urging by the parents.
That is the way it should be. Going to some other topics, you remember anything about divorce.
Oh, yes. You wouldn't hear of divorces very often, especially not of church people. And now we even have pastors that divorce. And I think it's a trend. It's easy to get divorced, and people just haven't quite learned to live together.
Then you might comment, too, about women working outside the home and how that has affected church work.
Oh, I think that's affected it to some degree. It was even illegal at times for women to work outside the home. And I remember when we first came to Moorhead, a married woman couldn't teach in the schools here mm-hmm. if her husband had a job. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, has changed.
And it was partly the war, I think, that brought
out. Oh, that's had a lot to do with it, I think.
Because then women had to go to work a great deal more.
And I think a lot of this, with women working, it has to be worked out pretty carefully. I think that if the husband and wife agree to it and everything is fine and the children are not neglected, it probably is all right. But many times if a woman gets working away from the home, she finds she can make it and she isn't too happy with her home life, it'll cause separation. And that's dangerous, in my opinion.
Yes, it certainly does bring a problem. What about the ordaining of women?
Yes, I think I have that too. And that was in 1970 in San Antonio, Texas, at our national convention. It was ordained. I mean, it was voted to ordain women mm-hmm. in the church. And I think one of the first women to be ordained came up here and spoke at the Concordia Women's League, if you remember that probably. She was somewhat handicapped.
Yes, I believe she was.
And she served a parish for a while. She had a very sad ending. She happened to be in a fire, and she was a handicapped person. She couldn't get out, so she burned to death.
Do you remember anything about the pastors' groups, the pastors' Moorhead Pastoral Conference, or anything mm-hmm. of that?
Yes. The conference would take in a number of the towns nearby, and they would meet regularly for devotional meetings and fellowship about once a month, and I think they're still doing it. They used to call it circuits. Now they call it conferences.
Oh, yes. Then also there is an ecumenical group. Do not the pastors of Moorhead meet together, all denominations?
Yes, that's correct. I'm not acquainted too much with that, but I think they have a meeting. They do meet regularly, but I don't know very much about that.
Oh, another place we have cooperation is in the Communiversity.
That has been very valuable, I think, and that was started, I think, about 15, oh, more than, I don't remember, but I think around 15, 20 years mm-hmm. ago. That has been very successful, and they have people of all faiths, of course, working together, and they've had some outstanding speakers. That's usually in the month of February.
Do you remember anything about the other churches that have developed in Moorhead after Trinity was originally the only church?
That was the only church. And then Our Savior's, we had a chapel up on North Moorhead, and that has developed into a strong congregation. At the time we came here, I think it was about 300 people from Trinity started this congregation called Our Savior's Lutheran. And that has developed into a strong congregation. They have three pastors. And then, sometime later, that was about in 19, that was in the early 50s, Good Shepherd started. A survey was made while my husband was bishop, and they surveyed South Moorhead, and they decided that there was room for another church here. But they made a little mistake. They didn't know that Moorhead was going to grow so far south. And so they figured that about 12th was a very good spot, 12th Avenue South. And if they really should have gone about 6-8 blocks farther south, because that's just where the growth came so fast. And so Good Shepherd has grown into a very fine congregation also. And then sometime later, quite a few years later, there was Moorhead was still growing and a little bit to the southeast, and so Christ the King was started. And many of our people joined there because it was a neighborhood church for them. So we really have three churches that have sprung out of Trinity.
Yes, and that is all from what we call the American Lutheran Church. And we might mention that we have other Lutherans in Moorhead. We have Bethesda Lutheran Church, is from the Lutheran Church in America, far south. And there is our Redeemer Lutheran Church of the Missouri Synod, which is not planning to go into any merger. And there are other groups, too, as we have a Wisconsin Synod, a Triumph Lutheran Brethren mm-hmm. Synod. But we have in the future, then, plans for a union of the American Lutheran Church and the Lutheran Church in America. Now, how do you think that might affect our churches in Moorhead?
Well, I really don't think it's going to affect us very much, because I think those that have established themselves will stay pretty much in their own churches. I do think that when the what we used to call, well, it's Bethesda Lutheran now, Lutheran Church in America, when they moved so far south, they lost quite a few members. It was too far for many of them to go. And I think they would like to have stayed there. But we have exactly the same belief, and it really is good that we are joining now as a synod, I think.
Yes, it's fortunate for us it was moved so far south. I don't know if anybody has mentioned about how many churches in Moorhead are concentrated in the downtown area. As we have Trinity, mm-hmm. and nearby we have the Episcopal Church very mm-hmm. close, and the Congregational Church mm-hmm. very close, mm-hmm. and Bethesda used to be located close by, then they moved far south, but now that has recently been bought by the Baptist Church, I believe, so that we will have a church there too.
Well, I think parking problems has been the worst part of it for those churches, those smaller churches, and Trinity was just lucky in picking up some property not far from their church in the past few years, and so their parking problem isn't quite as bad. But there are times when we could use more parking too, but these other churches have very little parking, and I'm sure that hurts.
Yes, we might say a little more about the parking problem too. How does that affect the church services, or and the number and the times of the church services?
Well, I think right now, where we have only two services at Trinity, it isn't quite as bad. It gives a little break in between. But when we had three services, it was worse, and we may have to come to that now. With the large number that comes to church, we may have to come to three services. And then I think it will affect us more.
Yes, that's a big problem, to think that parking is one of the big problems of the church.
Well, people just don't walk anymore. They drive, if they're even a few blocks away. Some of them have a long distance to go, but of course, when you have people coming from West Fargo and Fargo and North Fargo, like we do here at our church, you have to use a car. Bound to be a problem.
Well, do you suppose now this great emphasis on health and the emphasis on walking is going to bring back a little more, don't people want to walk on Sunday?
Well, I think you're right that there are some people that really are walking now. I can name a few if I want. I could name a few in our church that are walking about a mile to church because they think they need it, and that's wonderful. But of course, in the winter, when we have so much ice, it isn't very good.
Yes, and with small children, too, I suppose that's another time. And something else we might talk about, do most churches have nursery facilities? You remember in the early days, how mm-hmm. was that?
We just carried the babies to church with us, and they were usually pretty good. And if they were noisy, we'd take them out. But I think that it's been very wonderful here. And even before we came here, we were used to it. We had a nursery in Duluth where we were. But I think it was started about that time, and that would be in the late 49s. And that was a fairly large church. But in the smaller churches, of course, they just don't have it. They don't have a place for them. And so if a child is disturbing, a mother is expected to take the child out, and probably there's no other place except a basement or a cloakroom or someplace.
And another related topic there, our downtown churches in Moorhead were affected by the change in the people living there, that there got to be less children. Now, how does a church like Trinity cope with having the children moving away from the area?
In what way do you mean?
Did it mean quite a reduction in the number of families with small children?
I don't think so. I think we have more babies coming to Trinity than ever. I think it was not too long ago Pastor David Anderson said it looked like we might have to look for more Sunday school rooms, because the one or two or three, there's been as many as five roses on the altar, one for each new baby born in the congregation. And we were supposed to be a congregation of old people. And I think it's just marvelous how many young people are in church, and how many young mothers. And we do have an excellent nursery here. We do have the facility, and I think that's marvelous.
Yes, I think our church had to work at it. Trinity is my church also, that for a number of years it seemed as though the Sunday school was going down quite a bit, and so there was quite a bit of concern. But another approach to that is to emphasize children's participation in the service, like through the music. Now, what are some things?
That's very true. We certainly have children's choir and an excellent one right now. We have several for the smaller children, and I think that has attracted a lot of parents, because they like to have their children take part, and the children usually like to if you have a good director. I think it's marvelous.
Then also our handbell choirs.
That's something that's developed the last years, and I think that I think our Savior's Church in Moorhead was the first one to have such an excellent one in Moorhead. It is great, because some of the young people that can't sing in the choirs are probably having a chance to sing there. I mean to play the bells, excuse me.
Yes. Then also, we might say something about organ music. What have you observed about the use of the organs in the various churches you have?
Well, I think in every church I have been in that I've been a member of, we've always had an organ. I remember the day when we had an old pump organ. There was a man that sat back of the organ and was pumping and pumping and pumping away while the lady played, usually a lady organist. And then as years went by, we had an electric organ, and then later a pipe organ, and then we came to Trinity, and after the new church was built, we got first one very beautiful pipe organ, and now it's been extended into an unusually great organ.
And what about the use of other instruments in church?
Yes, we have had guitar music, which was unheard of when I was young. Guitar music, and we've had harpsichord. And both of them have added a great deal, I think, to the service at times.
And we've had violinists, quite a few violinists.
Many violinists and cellists.
And also solos. I think someone mentioned that originally you didn't have a person sing a solo in church. You just had a choir. And now we often have soloists also.
That's right.
Taking part in the service. Can you think of any other phases of religion in Moorhead that you might want to comment on?
Well, I think some years ago there was a statement in the Fargo Forum that students were not attending churches. And I think in our church, the pastor at that time resented that very much, and he just asked for a show of hands in church, how many students were in church. It was surprising. There was a large number of students in church. I think the trend was maybe for a while that many of them weren't going to church, but now we have students from Moorhead State, we have them from Concordia, we have them from NDSU that come over here to church. And I'm sure they attend churches in the NDSU students, many of them go to church in Fargo too. So I think the trend is the young people are going back if there ever was a time when they were negligent.
Well, that certainly is a good movement. We hope that that will continue. What about the bus? Now, you remember something about the bus services?
Yes, the bus service was started quite a few years ago. I can't tell you how many years ago, but it was started quite a few years ago. And they pick up students from Moorhead State and from Concordia, as well as senior citizens. And they have made use of it, especially in the winter. I think this time of the year, the students kind of like to walk along and enjoy each other's company. But I think during the winter, it's been very useful.
Well, another aspect of the work is with the older people. We might mention what have most churches started having to provide, especially for senior citizens?
Well, I think in several of the churches in the area, close in at least Fargo Moorhead, we have in Trinity a very excellent Friday fellowship group, and we have as many as 200 there, and we meet every second Friday, and the programs have been excellent. And sometimes a speaker, sometimes it's music, but the fellowship has been great. And I think that that has been one of the most worthwhile things for the older people, because many of those people that come have told me that they don't go to many other things, but this is just something they look forward to. There's bus transportation if they need it, and naturally they like to come. And in the last few years, we've had an exchange program with the St. Joseph's group of senior citizens. And that's been outstanding. And usually it's right around St. Patrick's Day. And we meet in their fellowship hall once during the month, and then they meet in ours. And it's helped to promote good fellowship, because many of those people are neighbors of each other and good friends. And to think they can get together for a religious program and a social afternoon is certainly something to be applauded.
Another thing that has changed recently, originally our church was mainly of people of Norwegian background. Mm-hmm. Now, have you heard any statements about how that is going?
Oh, that's changed a great deal. We have so many people from other ethnic backgrounds. And I think that that's the way it should be.
Yes, I think I heard Mr. Rendall say that that the Norwegian names in the church directory are in a minority now.
That's
whereas
right.
Originally it was just all Norwegian. Another change that has come quite recently is with relation to the handicapped, and that's because of the outside pressures. But how has that been reflected
well,
in our church?
We've got an elevator now. I think some of the other churches have had it, or some of them were smart enough to build so they didn't have to worry about an elevator. Good Shepherd was built that way because I think they saw the need of omitting all those steps that we had at Trinity. And now, of course, we have an elevator and it's used. And you think of on certain occasions when the handicapped or the people in wheelchairs come in numbers from Eventide, we'd have as many as 12, 13 there at one time for special events like Ash Wednesday Communion and Holy Thursday afternoon. And I happened to be there this year. And it was just marvelous to see these people and their smiling faces, to think that they could come to an event like that, which meant so much to them.
Another thing that comes to mind that we haven't mentioned before is church suppers. What can you tell us about how church suppers have been part of the church?
That was popular in the days when I was very young. I think they would have a big meal and they'd serve it for little or nothing, and people just looked forward to it. It was a fine social affair, but it got to be real hard work. And then I think as the years went by, people were realized that they really weren't making much money on this. They used to use that money for missions in my day when I was young. And then as I grew older, I find that people thought, well, really, there's an easier way to do it than these big suppers, because crowds would come. People came from the whole community. And so I think they figured that it was better to give a little bit more and just dispense with them. And now I think in our church down at Trinity, we only serve meals where we're helping out some group, like these conferences that meet regularly, once or so, or maybe twice a year. And then we serve our own people for special events or potlucks or something like that. So that has changed to a great degree. And I think a lot of that came through the women's group of the church.
Yes, they felt they should be more giving and less trying to earn the money. You mentioned potlucks. Now, we still have something of that for fellowship, do we not?
That's right. And that is much easier and very successful, I think, and really needed.
Yes, well, I surely thank you for all you've told us about the various activities and how the changes have developed in the Lutheran Church over the years. So I think that will conclude our interview.